I'm Nicole Sweeney. That's what you say.
That is what I say. That's true. Okay.
You threw me off my game, man.
Hello and welcome to Snark Squad Pod, a media podcast full of friendship, feelings, and snark. I'm Nicole Sweeney.
My name is Marines, and today we are joined by Paige and Maureen.
Hi, everybody. I'm Paige. I host a podcast with Maureen called Once Upon a Binge, but you can also find me elsewhere on the internet under Minimal Bookie.
And I'm Maureen, and I also obviously host the podcast with Paige, and you can find me everywhere on the internet under Maureen Keevy.
And today we invited Paige and Maureen to talk to us about Enola Holmes. It is a Netflix adaptation of a series of books. This one is based on the first book in the series, and it introduces to us Enola Holmes, who is the much younger sister of Mycroft and Sherlock Holmes, born to their mother later in life. So Enola is raised at the Holmes estate, educated entirely by their mother, and let to run rather free. Everything changes for Enola on the day of her 16th birthday when her mom up and disappears without a word and without a trace, leaving behind only a set of gifts for Enola that include a cipher book and a book of flowers and their meanings. Enola sends for her brothers, who haven't seen her since she was a baby. Mycroft, as the eldest brother, decides to send Enola, who is now his ward, to boarding school, and Sherlock is supposed to focus on finding their mother. In trying to figure out where her mother went herself, Enola discovers a secret message in her birthday gifts, and it leads her to a stack of cash, which is always appreciated. And with this money, she decides to run away disguised as a boy. At the train station, she comes across a marquess named Tewksbury, a boy about her own age, who is also running away from his family and from his estate. There is a man on the train, the man in the bowler hat, who is also looking for Tewksbury. Enola at first wants nothing to do with Tewksbury since she's like on her own mission. But when the bowler hat man tries to throw Tewksbury off the train, she intervenes and they both jump off. They travel the rest of the way to London together. And then once they're there, they part ways. Enola changes her disguise and she kind of dresses up as like a proper lady to continue her search for her mother. She decides to leave a message, like a cipher, for her mother in the newspaper. And in remembering what her mother kind of was doing or talking about with her like friends or a group of women who used to meet at the estate, she figures out, or she is led to kind of like a safe house. And it is like a feminist safe house with lots of papers and pamphlets about giving the women right to vote, and also containing a lot of explosives. After Enola is leaving the safe house, she is attacked by the man in the bowler hat, who is still looking for Tewksbury. She manages to escape the man in the bowler hat by setting off the explosives in the safe house and running away. And because of this, because she realizes that Tewksbury is still in danger, she decides to kind of put her search for her mother on pause and try and find Tewksbury again and help him. So she goes back to the Tewksbury estate in order to find clues, in order to learn more. And when she's there, she comes across Inspector Lestrade, who claims that who knows Sherlock Holmes, which is a problem because Enola is in disguise as Sherlock's assistant. The family, the Tewksbury family, kind of runs her off. They don't want her to do anything there, but she still manages to find Tewksbury's treehouse and get some clues there about, like, I don't know. She really doesn't get anything useful there. Mostly she, like, falls in love with him. Is what happens. She's like, oh, he has a treehouse and he likes flowers. But anyways, in remembering that he likes flowers, she figures out that he has led everybody astray and is probably working somewhere selling flowers. So she heads back to London, finds him indeed selling flowers, and warns him of the danger. They head off together, but they are caught up by Lestrade, and so Enola stays behind to kind of create this diversion while Tewksbury gets away, but Lestrade captures Enola and returns her to Mycroft. Mycroft sends her to finishing school, where she stays for a little while in misery until Tewksbury mails himself to the finishing school and helps her escape. At first, Tewksbury wants to go back to London, but she has kind of figured out that somebody, the person who has sent the like man in the bowler hat after him, has to be somebody in his family. At first she thinks his uncle, because they, you know, don't want him to vote, number one, with the feminist agenda, and you know, it would be better if he were not around, because then the uncle would inherit. So they get back to the Tewksbury estate, and there the man in the bowler hat tries to kill them a lot with a shotgun. But and Enola fights back and manages to use her fighting skills to knock him down, and he bangs his head and dies. And so at this point, they thought danger was over. They thought it was the uncle all along, but it turns out it was Tewksbury's grandmother who is the real villain. She is, you know, a traditionalist and doesn't want the feminist agenda. So she shoots her own grandson in the chest, but he survives because he's wearing a plate of armor.
Yep, that's it. We've been with you this far, so yep, sure.
Sherlock, meanwhile, heads to Scotland Yard to meet with Lestrade, and he's figured out the Tewksbury case, and the inspector is like, well, how'd you figure it out? And then also, how'd your sister figure it out before you? And Sherlock is duly impressed. Enola finds a message in the newspaper, and she decodes it, but she realizes very quickly that it's not from her mother, and she figures that it's Sherlock or one of her brothers who have done it. So she gets in disguise again and kind of like watches for her brothers at this meeting place, and it is her brothers. And we hear Sherlock and Mycroft talking, and Sherlock wants Enola to become his ward, and Mycroft's like, yeah, fine, she's annoying. And but they don't spot her, so Enola just kind of gets away. She leaves like her old toy out as a clue, so Sherlock knows that she was there, and he smiles all fondly because what a gal. And then Enola returns to her rooms, and her mother is there, and she's like, yeah, sorry for abandoning you, my child, but I do love you very much. And it turns out she would abandon her to fight for the feminist agenda and the right to vote, because she wants her daughter to grow up in a better world. And the end.
Yep.
That was beautiful.
So that was this movie. We are going to start where we always start. Did you like this movie?
I liked it. I've seen it twice now. So I really enjoyed it the first time. I just thought it was like a light, like fluffy sort of film to watch. And I was watching with a bunch of other people, so we all really like got to enjoy it together and swoon together over like the male actors. But upon that's like the true highlight of this film. But upon the rewatch, I feel like the colorblind casting sort of made me ask a lot more questions than I did the first time. And I had some questions about the plot overall because I was paying more attention to it.
I am in the same boat as Paige. I think we both rewatched it today. But I watch it with friends, and I just thought it was very fun, and especially for the age range it's targeting, I was like, just a fun time for kids having a great time. But there is just not a lot of depth behind, besides the like main points that are hammered home a lot throughout the movie, but it was still like very fun, and I thought the style of it was a lot of fun, so I overall enjoyed it.
I also enjoyed it kind of on that same level. I watched it today, so I didn't have a chance to rewatch it or really sit with it, but I did read. So it's a series of books. I think there are like 6 or 7 that these are based on. So I read the first one, which the mystery in the first one is what's adapted here. And so I have like feelings about it as an adaptation that were giving me a little bit of pause, but not in a way that took away from my enjoyment, because it was just really fun and the casting was great, and it was a nice 2020 is the worst, but this movie gave me a couple hours of joy kind of movie. Yes. Like, so that was good.
Yeah, I feel like we're all kind of on a like very similar page here, because I also like generally liked it. Like in my heart, just like in my feelings, very strong positive feelings about the experience of watching this movie. Millie Bobby Brown is like delightful in this role. Like I don't know that some of the casting is brilliant, some of the casting is not. We'll talk about that. But I think like in general, I think it was a really, really fun movie. I have some problems with it
with some storytelling choices that we will get into. You mentioned that this is an adaptation of the like Enola Holmes books series, or of a book in that series. And that, of course, is also Sherlock Holmes is a character that we are all familiar with, has also been adapted. So I also, as like a baseline question, in addition to did you like it, I just want to get everybody's history and background with like Sherlock Holmes and with the Enola Holmes books.
I have not read the book series, but now I'm curious about them after watching this because I knew they had to be middle grade just given the tone of this film. But previously, I have watched the BBC series with Benedict Cumberbatch and really enjoyed the first season. The other seasons I have problems with. And I have also watched the film adaptations with Robert Downey Jr. I do remember reading like the actual Sherlock Holmes like books, but it's been a minute and I was a kid, so I can't really claim that my memory is good with that, like the actual books themselves.
I think I'm kind of in the same boat as well. I feel like I'm just repeating, but I have watched the BBC series except for season 3 and never got there. I don't know if it's ever going to happen. We'll see eventually. The Robert Downey Jr. movies, I feel like there's another Sherlock big movie that I've also seen and I can't remember. I've seen a couple different movie adaptations because my dad was a big fan of Sherlock Holmes, so he was really into everything. And I would be really interested to read the Enola Holmes books because I would love to know what the differences are between the movie tone and the book tone and all of that. But they are intriguing to me now. And I don't think I've ever read the Sherlock Holmes books, but again, would love to read them maybe someday.
I have never read any of the Sherlock Holmes mysteries. I have not watched the Robert Downey Jr. ones. I quit the BBC one in the first season, so I was early. And I feel like, what's the other one? The one that you watched, Nicole?
Elementary.
I watched like a season of Elementary, but I didn't continue on with that. You know, on brand for me. I start things and I never finish. So I have started a lot of Sherlock Holmes things that I have never finished. And like I said, like I mentioned, I was not familiar with the Enola Holmes series prior to this. But again, being who I am, when we were like, oh, let's watch the movie and do a podcast episode, I was like, first, I shall read the book. And it is middle grade, so it's very quick to read, very fast. And I'm sure that I will have like plenty to say about like how it's been adapted here, because there are some pretty significant changes, I would say. But it was very like, again, light, entertaining. It's a middle grade mystery. So exactly what you would expect to get out of a middle grade mystery. That was that, with Enola Holmes as the main character, who is super charming. So it was a good like 4-hour audiobook experience.
Oh, I love that. Now I was already interested, but now I'm especially interested. I have not read the Enola Holmes books. I haven't read anything Sherlock Holmes. I have also seen all the Robert Downey Jr. movies. I remember enjoying them, but I don't, like, they're not something that I actively seek out or return to. I freaking love Elementary, but that feels so much like its own thing to me that I don't necessarily attach any like Sherlock Holmes feelings to that. Like, that feels like its own sort of separate entity. But that's like my background with Sherlock Holmes. So re this movie, how did you guys feel about Enola? And I guess I already spoiled my feelings about Millie Bobby Brown, but and her in this role.
I thought she was so charming, and she really was the perfect person for this role, I feel like, especially because she, I'm pretty sure, was an executive producer. So she found this and decided she wanted to adapt this. And I just think that's a genius move on her part, just like as the actress herself. But in the film, pretty much her performance has basically set this up to be a great franchise on Netflix. And I am an even bigger fan of her now, because I did have experience with her from Stranger Things. And I just feel like this was a completely different role for her, and it really proved that like she does have acting skills, and I'm excited to see where she goes next.
Yeah, I honestly did not know that she was in it. I somehow had seen the poster everywhere, didn't register that she was even the star, didn't even come to me, didn't know Helena Bonham Carter was in it. I only knew about Henry Cavill and Sam Claflin. That's
correct.
So I was like watching it, and I was on Netflix party with some friends, and I was like, Millie Bobby Brown is in this. She's the main character. Who knew? Anyway, I also only know her from Stranger Things. I don't really think she's had any other breakout roles outside of that. And this is such a different role for her. I liked it. I liked her in it. I thought that she really held the action well together through the whole thing, for me at least. And because she is like the movie, like everything else is happening, but like she is the movie. And if she was not good, then it would not be the fun movie that it is.
Yeah, I really thought she was great and charming. And I think the first time that I, or like how I really registered that she was doing a great job in the movie, like for me, it was when she was like breaking the fourth wall, because that is something that is super tricky to me and that I generally don't like when it happens in TV or movies or whatnot. But the, you know, as she kept turning to us, the audience, and talking to us, I was like, yeah, you can talk to us. Like, this is cute. You're selling it. I love it. So I think she did a great job. And something about Enola Holmes and from the books as well, and here, I don't think it's quite as pronounced in the movie, but in general, like Enola Holmes, the character, has the capacity to be very strongly like not like other girls. But what I liked is that she's introduced as this character who is like running free, running wild, you know, according to like the methods or standards of society. So, but she's so like against going to finishing school and corsets, like she hates corsets and all those things. But then she ends up using a lot of that to her advantage. And she finds this really neat balance between riding her bike around or knowing jujitsu, but also I'm going to wear a corset anyways, because it's kind of cute and it hides my money. So it does a really good job of like balancing like all of her personality traits and not making it overly like I'm not like other girls, which I liked. And I thought that Millie Bobby Brown did a good job kind of bringing balance to that character as well.
Yeah, I think part of what I am bothered by in this movie is like the weirdness of the feminist agenda, and like the way that that's handled in general, I think is mm-hmm. like not great. Mm-hmm. But I will say that like I appreciated, given who this movie's kind of target audience is, the way that it blended that sense of like your protagonist is this girl who is solving mysteries, and but like also she's like doing it with fashion. And I think like that was a good way to, in the limited space of a 2-hour movie, to sort of undercut some of that not like other girls energy. And also just Millie Bobby Brown is so charming here that it manages to also cut through any ways in which I think many other actresses could have made this part grating in a way that she did not. Like I was charmed by her from moment one. I could watch her and Helena Bonham Carter playing tennis for hours. Like I would just like that, like you would just give me that, the however, like that, whatever, 15 seconds of movie. I don't know how long they spent shooting it, but I would like all of the footage, please. I in general really, really loved this character and her in this part. And like that is really central to why I am interested in reading the books, is that like whatever else I may feel about this movie, I cared deeply about this character and I want good things for her. I am invested in her future. So yeah.
I think the setup even is just like coming from the books or whatnot is like really charming also. Like imagine Sherlock and Mycroft Holmes had this little sister. Like I'm already sold on that premise. Yes. And I think that they, you know, did a good job, not to keep being like the book evangelist, but in the book also of like setting up this idea of how it would feel to be that little sister kind of in the shadow of these two men, these two successful and important men. And so seeing her kind of come into her own, and also it's a trope that I love where it's like a character has been trained for something but they didn't know, and so she's like, you know, flashing back and accessing all this information that her mother was arming her with all along, and finding, oh okay, like I am capable, like I am useful, I have all these skills, even though I didn't know in the moment that this is what she was preparing me for. So I just, all of those are like tick, tick, tick on things that I like, mm-hmm. and that I found charming within this even. And so like that's the good part. So nothing bad to say about Enola or Millie Bobby Brown.
I normally would be like continuing to run through the different characters, but I actually, everything that you just said makes me want to sort of jump ahead to talking about like the major tropes and themes of this movie. And I feel like we'll kind of get to the other characters as we talk about that. But I also, on the list of like like the tick, 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 why this is for me extremely my shit. The coming of age element of this movie is like, I love that. And I think, I also think that like that piece of it is really, really strong. I think that they, the story does a good job of setting up all the things that her mother wanted her to be, all the things that Mycroft and society want her to be, what, I don't know, Sherlock represents for her in terms of another sort of vision of her future. And like, there's a very super on the nose, but like still effective moment in the middle of the movie where she's like, no, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to save the sheep. I'm going to save the boy, and I'm going to be what I want to be. And like that, having that sort of moment. And I think, and again, in a movie that is targeted at a younger audience, I am infinitely more forgiving of those incredibly on the nose, like, and now we are telling you the point, because like yes, and also just in coming of age stories, I love those moments. Like I love that moment, the moment where the character is like, no, I'm gonna be who I want to be. Yeah, you go, character. I want you to be who you want to be too. So I don't know, I guess I want to talk about how you guys felt about, I guess, either the coming of age elements of the story or just like tropes more broadly that came up in this movie.
Yeah, I love a good coming of age. They are some of my favorite stories. And I think you had that, and you had kind of the mirror coming of age minor story of the Duke, whatever. He's not really the Duke yet. I can't say that word. I'm not going to try. The kid who is a little himbo in the making, that one.
he is a little himbo in the making.
He is. He's not beefy yet, but he's on his way. But like, you have his mirror story that's kind of a coming of age and coming into his own and not running away from his problems like a lot of coming of age stories have. You have that like in the minor. And I also thought it was really interesting having their mom being present. I feel like in other Sherlock adaptations, that's their family dynamic. Besides them, Mycroft and Sherlock being brothers, like, that's the dynamic. That's it. That's all you get. And I could kind of see, like, why they were the way that they were some of the time, like, even Mycroft, based on how Enola was raised, almost. So that was really fun for me. And I'm trying to think of other tropes that I really liked. I love when there's good fight scenes. That's not a trope, but I do love it, and I loved her in them.
Yeah, I feel like some of the strongest points for me were when she, like Mari said earlier, she was realizing that she actually was capable of doing everything that was set out before her. And I really enjoyed that. I like the way that Sherlock both played a foil, but also was an encourager, because you could tell the entire time that he knew exactly what she was doing, but he trusted that she was capable as well. Like, he trusted that she had the skills and she would be fine. And he just let her find her own path, just like her mom wanted her to do. I will say that the other trope that was present that I really enjoyed was the very close mother-daughter bond in this film. I was absolutely moved, so that by the end of the film, when we see that the mom is back in the room, I was crying. I was a mess both times I watched it, even though I knew it was coming. I just feel like because they had such a rapport, it was beautiful. And as a sucker and a mama's girl, I really was hooked by that premise in the film as well.
So it's funny because I also really like their relationship, but something about seeing it on screen also made me a little like, I don't know, indignant or like upset at the mom. So the characters in the adaptation are aged up. So Enola Holmes in the books is 14. Tewksbury is 12, and he's not at all a love interest. So they made it sexy for Netflix by aging them up and making them the same age, but whatever. So the whole thing of like her mom leaving her and on her birthday, like, it was just like a thing where I'm like, did you have to do all of this? Wasn't there a version of this where you could have been like, hey Nola, I'm gonna go for 2 weeks, stay here with the servants, be back later, and she'd be like, okay mom, and that's it. But just like abandoning your daughter without a word is a choice, Mama Holmes. But the cool, I guess, thing about it is that I, too, am a sucker for a coming-of-age story. So it sets one out, like, again, in very defined terms, very in your face, you know, very literally, okay, you're a woman now, fly free. Your mom is not here and no one is here for you. Literally go make your way in the world. I gave you everything you need. Goodbye. So it is a very exaggerated like setup for a coming of age story, but I did enjoy the coming of age overall. So like I was more forgiving of it. But by the time the mom got in the room at the end and she's like, I'm sorry. I was like, bitch, come on. Honestly, you're just going to show up here. She almost got kidnapped and murdered like several times. And you're just going to be like, I'm sorry. Okay.
I wanted them to have it out. I was like, you need to fight.
Yes.
She tells her what a fine young woman she's becoming. And Millie Bobby Brown lifts up her chin with her teary eyes. And it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So leave me alone.
It's because like, I feel like she was waiting that entire time. She was so worried that her mother left her. I don't think she was worried her mother left her because she thought she wasn't enough, but she was looking for like that approval from her mother. She felt like she had to like constantly prove her skills to her mom. So when her mother's finally like, yes, you're good, you're great, I love what you've become, that emotion was what really got me. I was like, she finally got what she wanted this entire time.
Yeah. I will also say, I mean, everything that you said is true though, Mari. Like, you're actually in fact correct about all of it. The other bit of casting though that I really just like adored is Helena Bonham Carter in that role. Like, it's so perfect. It paired nicely with some of the stylistic elements. I think Paige mentioned this earlier, but like some of the stylistic elements of the way that this movie was made. Another thing that like can often be very hit or miss is the way that this story is kind of jumping around in time a little bit, but it's always very clear. Like they're not jumps, like the actual plot is happening in a single timeline and we're just sort of dipping backwards in time for character development purposes, never for, you know, to aha, gotcha the viewer, which is the thing that I really hate often with time jumps in stories like this. But the intercutting of Enola in like the movie's main timeline with all of these little moments with her and her mother, I also found incredibly charming and added a ton of like life to this story, like, and whimsy to the story. So like you have this really dramatic moment where she's about to be murdered by an assassin, but like the fact that we're cutting between her like the fight and her training with her mother in a beautiful idyllic countryside has this way of keeping the story lighter even when the plot is maybe like not actually that light.
And I will say that dynamic and the whole idea of like Enola being brought up the way that she was, that was a better end, I think, of some of the messaging that they wanted to get to, where some of the other like feminist agenda stuff was kind of beating you over the head. But here are these two women who by all accounts have been abandoned by all of the men in their lives. And they don't own anything. They don't have anything, to the point where her mom has to lie to squirrel away money. And just, you know, the estate goes to, you know, it's covered in ivy, flowers everywhere. And they just kind of live the life that they want to lead. So those constant flashbacks and reminders that, like, I don't know, there was this such a wholesome and pure upbringing that she had, and she's so well educated, and her mom taught her everything that she needed to know. All of those things were really, I don't know, well done and kind of touching and good touchstones and moments throughout the story, especially when the story was doing a little too much in other regards. Those were nice moments.
Yeah, I really liked Helena in the film, and I really liked her when I rewatched it the second time. But today I actually found an article from The Hollywood Reporter that sort of like impacted the way I was viewing the film. I sent it to Maureen, but basically she was talking about how, because of all of the more talks about diversity in film, she was basically saying that Millie Bobby Brown would have to be Black if it had been filmed in 2020. And because of that, also with the like colorblind casting, I was just like, well, you sort of made this more complex for me than it needs to be. But like her performance by itself was great, and I believed her as the mom. And obviously, I'm still very attached to that mother-daughter relationship. But it really, why do our faves have to say things online? Just don't talk anymore, please.
No talk 2020.
Please.
So the title of this podcast is going to have to be "We Ruin Enola Holmes for You."
Sorry.
I mean, it's not us. It's people who don't know when to shut the fuck up. God.
Truly. So I'm sorry to ruin this film for you.
I mean, it's fine.
It wasn't you. It was, you know, you Googling and finding what somebody said.
We all would have known eventually.
I just need to get off Twitter and stop looking at what is trending, and I would be great.
You mentioned the way that, like, the feminism is beating you over the head. My problem with it is not even that. Like, that actually isn't really the mm-hmm. critique that I would have of it. It's more that it was, like, hollow.
Right.
I actually wanted more of that stuff. I just, like, but it felt like they went to such pains to give us, you know, quotable, gifable moments like, you know, you don't care about politics because the world is built for you. And, like, yeah, that's a great line, but, like, it's toothless. Like, there's nothing, like, there's no real substance to any of that. Like, that's a fascinating line if you give me any understanding whatsoever of what Eudoria Holmes's big feminist agenda was. Like, what were they gonna bomb? I still don't know what the fuck they were gonna bomb.
That's a great point.
I'm fascinated. I would love to know what the, like, fucking suffragettes were gonna bomb in order to bring about their big agenda. Like, related to that, the antagonist of the film turns out to be essentially, like, the white women who voted for Trump, and, like, that's a thing that you can unpack and do something with, and the movie didn't, right? Like, the movie doesn't grapple with it. It's just that, like, you know, she's a traditionalist because she's old is more where they go with that, and they don't really, like she's old and rich, but, like, in a movie that is constantly saying, you know, look at the suffragettes doing their radical thing, they're crazy, they want to have political power, and, like, but to not in any way reckon with the impact of when you get to the end, the villain is, like, also a woman, and, like, I there's something there, and but the movie doesn't do anything with it, and, like, that all of that was endlessly frustrating. And I feel like that and a number of other problems I have with it would have most effectively been solved by making this a series and not a movie. I think that part of the problem is trying to pack it into the confines of a 2-hour movie. That was very, very frustrating for me. And it is definitely a thing about the story that sits worse in my feelings when I'm thinking about it. Like, I don't really think about it when I'm watching it. I can watch it and just, like, enjoy the experience that I'm having. But when I'm not watching it and I'm thinking about it at all, I'm annoyed by that.
I agree. And I think that's exactly where I was going when I was saying, like, kind of that later portion or that messaging, especially because of that, like, feminism is crazy. It was, like, kind of packed in there. And you see it, especially, like, when she goes to visit, like, the safe house and there's, like, explosives everywhere. And later, Sherlock goes to visit her at the finishing school and she's like, mother would never, would she? And so there's this whole, like, message there, this is, like, extreme, this is terrible, how could she? Mm-hmm. Which it's kind of like, well, I mean, you're saying in so many words, like, you know, the movie also has a line about, like, you got to make some noise to get what you want, and this is, you know, we're changing the world, but at the same time it's treating it in this way that is, like, so extreme. And so I don't know, it got very muddled, and especially because there was nothing defined there. It just seemed like this vague plot point to be like, what would her mother run away for? Feminism. Okay. That's it. It never went any further than that.
Feminism and bombs.
And bombs. And I think so, now hearing you talk about, like, the main villain at the end being a woman, it reminded me of the book Ninth House by Leigh Bardugo, which is kind of a spoiler. Sorry, but the big bad at the end of the book is also a woman. But that story is, like, about, like, power as well. And so, like, fighting against systems of power. And I think that there is something to be said about white women or women who uphold systems of power. But to tell a whole story about women fighting against systems of power and then be like, and the worst of them is also a woman. Like, you gotta contend with this. Yes. A little bit. Because at the end of the day, the main people who are benefiting from these systems of power are men. So to make the big bad a woman, like, what are you saying here? And specifically, why?
Right.
And the movie doesn't contend with that at all, as Nicole said. So it's just kind of like a weird thing. And it felt like a twist for the sake of a twist. And
Because all the pieces are there. Like, that's the thing that I find so exasperating and frustrating about it, right? Like, in the same way that there is a clear reason, right? Like, by and large, the beneficiaries of the system as it exists are men, but this woman is hella fucking rich. And she's also, you know, like, indoctrinated into that system and, like, you can go there. Like, you can give that a compelling, like, you can tie that to this story in a compelling way. I don't think that you can necessarily do that quite so effectively in the space of a 2-hour movie that is aimed at a younger audience. Like, I think in order to get there, you have to make a number of structural changes. Like, either you age it up or, again, you make it a show. but also there are pieces of it there in, like you said, in terms of this, the mother-daughter relationship, like the way that is presented, that like we see in all of these flashbacks, the life that they had, and they had it basically by hiding away from society. But like, obviously Enola was, you know, she's 16 now. So it's like kind of reaching the point where Eudoria can't really keep her in their sort of isolated, idyllic situation forever. So it's like at the point where Enola is going to have to go out into the world, and like Eudoria having this moment of, okay, I'm going to like change that world for you. Like, that's there. It's just like, but it's not like threaded. And it's like, it's the kind of thing where I feel like I can make the case for all of this, but that's like me doing it, not the movie doing it. And that's frustrating.
Yeah. And I feel like the whole part with the grandmother was very confusing to me as well, because at face value, you're just supposed to accept, like, she wanted things to remain as they were, and that's the reason she decided she was going to kill her literal flesh and blood.
A young boy.
You know, as one does.
Also second murder, or at least attempt to murder, or, like, plot of murder, second one in a row.
And, like, I feel like part of the problem was they refused to address class in this film in any way, because the whole premise relies on Enola being a rich white girl who is able to get into certain spaces and nobody will give her a second look. And because she has this money that her mother squirreled away from her rich brother, she is able to have access to getting the dress that she needs, to getting a room, to, like, paying off people so she can change her clothes. And I feel like that was a part that was missing for me. It was like there's no intersectionality to her exploring her identity. It was fully focused on the feminism, but it was very much like a white feminism. So that part of the depth, because I really liked the scene where I can't remember the character's name, but it was the person who runs the jujitsu, like, upstairs tea room situation, when she says to Sherlock, like, he doesn't want to change the system because he benefits from it. I was like, this is exactly what we could be exploring if we had more time and, like, more nuance to the entire story.
I also think that, like, the optics didn't help out here, because the whole thing that they set up is, like, Enola knows nothing of the world and she's very sheltered from the world. And then she gets to London and she's obviously very taken aback, but what she's taken aback by is poverty. And she, like, sees, like, she's like, oh, my, people begging on the street and things are, you know, she's taken to that first room and it's obviously not to the standard that she is used to. And so there's a lot of, like, pieces of it there, and even, like, the woman who shows her room or whatnot is kind of painted as a bad or opportunistic person, but, you know, she's poor. Or so there are, like, a lot of pieces where, I don't know, it felt a little gross the way that they were setting it up, especially seeing Enola move through some of these, like, you know, poor places in her, like, rich fancy lady gown or whatnot. So sometimes the optics didn't help out to the fact that they just completely bypassing anything at all about class.
Yeah, all of that. I would be really interested to see what they do in future films, if they franchise it and want to go deeper with some of that. I think, like you said, Nicole, a series would be better for that. But I would be interested to see if they, like, try to do more of that with more movies.
As the resident I read one book reader, I will say that none of this is in the book. We don't see like Enola's mom again. She completely gets, like, sidetracked by the whole Marquess thing, and she just, that's the mystery and that's it. And, like, her mom is still missing at the end, and we don't have any idea where her mom went. So I feel like that maybe the thing as the mysteries keep going is that she's, like, looking for her mom, quote unquote, but she keeps getting sidetracked by mysteries and be like, here's another one to solve. So I thought it was really interesting. And this happens a lot for book to TV adaptations or book to movies, where they take a lot of, like, the end of the series or middle of the series, like, plot progressions and they put it sooner in order to like spice it up or to like mix things up. And I'm curious how that would have worked if they had just left out the feminism stuff and left out like the where her mom was and it was just the mystery, because I felt like this movie had enough going on that it could have survived without it.
Yeah, and it would have been an inherently feminist story anyway because of the character and because of the situation she's placed in. So really, I feel like because she was trying to make this, like this was her first executive role, she really wanted it to be like this feminist story. But because there was no intersectionality to it, it fell sort of flat in that area.
I would like to shift to my other big grievance, and I think it's going to be an unpopular one, but the piece of the casting that I like really do take issue with is both of the Holmes brothers, I think, were badly cast. I have no real attachment to Sherlock Holmes. Like, I don't really care how he is portrayed necessarily. I do care though that this movie keeps telling us how like smart and shrewd he is. And like Henry Cavill has himbo energy. Like, I thought like it was really funny to Maureen when you pointed out Tewksbury, because I was like, sure, but my big note was like Henry Cavill is not Sherlock Holmes. He's not at no point was I like, yes, there is a shrewd, like he's an elegant himbo, but like he's that's as much as I can say for him in this movie. I just like, it was bewildering. I also had to like briefly look up like the idea that Sam Claflin is his older brother is like, I'm unacceptable. He's only 3 years younger than him. He looks more years apart to me than three, but he definitely looks younger than him. I don't know. Like everything about the casting of the two of them, they're wonderful to look at. I think that they are terribly cast. I'm maybe willing to be persuaded that the himbo casting of Sherlock Holmes is so bad it's good, because we're really supposed to be looking at Enola here. So like there's something inspired about like making Sherlock Holmes, giving him that energy. But like if you did, then you also had to like have the script give him that energy, and the script keeps reminding us how smart he is. And I'm just like, but what did he do? Like, what smart thing did he actually do in this movie?
Come hours after his sister in solving the mysteries to the inspector. That's what he did. I would argue that Sam is not attractive in this movie. At least he's not to me. It's the combo of his personality that he's acting, obviously, as Mycroft, and the mustache. It does not do it for me. He really let me down for the attractiveness in this movie.
And they also went ham there with his whole like women, yeah. Women can't think the entire time, and I was just like, calm down for the love of God. So I didn't enjoy that piece of it, which kind of soured there. The Sherlock thing is interesting because I hadn't really given much mind to like the casting or the performance, other than Henry Cavill is delicious. Like, yes. My eyes were so happy watching him. That is as much as I thought about it. But I guess the reason it didn't bother me is because, and I probably should have mentioned this at the top, Sherlock Holmes as a character generally bothers me. And I think that it's because it is this whole thing of like, he's so brilliant, he's allowed to be a dick to everybody. And that's the entire character, is like this major energy of he is like literally the worst to everybody, but he gets away with it because he's so smart. So the fact that he was just kind of like, not the worst and not that smart, I was like, oh, cool, I like this Sherlock.
He was soft boy Sherlock.
I love that you called him himbo Sherlock, because that is 100% what he was. But I feel like they threw him in for the older people who would be watching this, to be honest. He was there for us, the young kids. They get whoever Tewksbury is. I don't know that actor's name, but we get to swoon every time Sherlock is on screen briefly. And I feel like it was his charm, like because he's such a charming actor and that came through in the role, and because he's so nice to look at, that even when he's being a dick sometimes, you're more likely to forgive him because he's so pretty.
I like disagree that he is that charming. I think he's just that hot. Like, this is the thing, like, yes. Hot people, like the bar, the requirement is lower. Like, I don't think he's even that charming. He's just,
he doesn't do
hot.
Anything. He's not doing much of anything in this. Like, not even facial expressions. He's giving
let me enjoy his little laugh when he realizes Enola. solve the case. That's all I need.
Like, he's like emoting 20-30% more than he was as Geralt, and that's like it. this is as much as he's giving us.
Honestly,
that was the perfect role for him, though, right? That is where he was allowed to really truly shine. Like, you just need to be hot. You need to have like the emotional range of a spork. Like, it's fine. It doesn't. But in this role, I don't know. I agree that he was great to look at. I just don't understand why he was there otherwise.
No, there is no otherwise. Just great to look at.
Okay. Good.
Well, isn't there that like whole lawsuit thing happening where there's like that period of time that there's softer Sherlock who's not as much of an asshole that is not public domain currently? So like Enola Holmes, the series and the movie, are both being sued because they quote unquote used that Sherlock instead of the like cold calculating Sherlock.
Oh my God.
That's literally happening.
Yeah, I had heard this basically described as like that Sherlock Holmes is now public domain, except if he has emotion. Like Sherlock Holmes with emotion is still copyrighted.
And he did in this one. He smiled like 3 times and he went ha at the end. Those are clear emotions.
Okay, wait. So really, I take it back. I do understand why Henry Cavill is here, because they were trying to not get sued. They were like, here's the deal. Sherlock Holmes cannot have emotions, but Enola Holmes, the book series, gave him emotions. What do we do with this?
Who do we know who's worked for Netflix before and has no emotions?
It's all clear now. Everything makes sense to me.
Did you guys ship Millie's character and Tewkesbury? Because that was a whole thing for me. I was very much rooting for them. And I hope that's a through line in all the films. Like, he just makes an appearance here and there being his baby himbo self.
Truly.
Yeah, I love them. And I also appreciated, like, I know that Mari was joking that it is like making it spicy for Netflix or whatever, but I appreciated that they still did like make an effort to keep it fairly tame and yes. You know, I appreciated that overall tone to it, but I also was a very, very big fan, and I liked that they kept it so tame, not just because like age appropriateness, like I don't really care, like I'm not gonna be first in line at the like think of the children whatever, but I appreciate it because of the ways in which this is Enola Holmes' coming of age story. Like, I appreciate that it was like, no, I can't. Like, I'm not going to come move in with you because I like just got out on my own. So let me figure out who I'm going to be. Like, calm down a second. I'm not ready to go marry you, baby Tewkesbury. So
let me live on my own.
One of my favorite like tropes in like Regency romances anyway, like when I read them, is this idea of like the outcast of society who still gets with like the Duke, and she's like, haha, bitches. I'm a duchess now, and what? So the idea that she's like this societal outcast and everybody's like trying to, you know, force her, you need a husband, you need a man, you need this, and she doesn't want it, but she still ends up with the Marcus. I'm like, go girl. I'll land you a man. I'm supportive of that trope.
I like them together in that I like him. He's just a little precious child. He loves flowers. He literally leaves his home so he can run a flower stand. Like, really the most himbo in training energy of all. Bless his soul. So I like him. So I like them together because I really enjoyed him as a character. But yeah, I like that she's still kind of on her own. You know, just as one does, living on your own at 16 in London. It's chill. She can live on her own and have no one looking after her. It's cool.
Can we talk about how at like the very end, he like kisses her hand again, very like tame, mm-hmm. very whatever. And then he cries.
Yes.
Crying.
I wrote that down.
Respect for women. Too emotional.
So cute. How precious.
I'm excited for Gen Z for having their white boy of the month.
Yeah. I was like, he has potential to really be their white boy of the month.
And on that note, thank you for listening to this episode of Snark Squad Pod. Thank you to Paige and Maureen for joining us. If you are enjoying this podcast that we upload when we feel like it, you can support us, I guess, at patreon.com/snarksquad or rate and review it. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up on snarksquad.com where you can tell us all of your thoughts and feelings about Enola Holmes, or you can find us on Twitter at snark_squad. I am at Sweeney Says.
You can find me at My Name is Marines.
You can find me at Minimal Bookie.
And me at Maureen Keevy.
This show is a Snark Squad production, and the theme music is by Stefan Chin.